Welcome to Practical Christian Living.
We're going to read that early on, David says, who am I to be a part of the king's family? He's humble about it, but now he's like, God chose me. Then he says, therefore, I will play music before the Lord, and I will be even more undignified than this, and I will be humble in my own sight. Well, he's not being humble right there. When you're telling people I'm going to be humble, that's not humble.
It is so good to quietly reflect upon the condition of our heart before God. It might be easy to be humble when you don't have much or when you're having to rely on God for every provision in your life. But when things are going your way, you've got accolades and gifts coming from here and there. Pride and selfishness can begin to sneak in. We are learning lessons from the life of David, and today we're in chapter 18, 17 through 30, with Robert Furrow, pastor of Calvary, Tucson.
In our study of the life of King David, we are now in 1 Samuel chapter 18, examining his marriage to Michal, the youngest daughter of King Saul, and David's first wife. The title of the message is The Untold Story of Michal. Now let's also talk about the way I'm saying her name, because I normally say Michael, but I'm not going to say Michael tonight. Michael is kind of the Americanized way of doing it. I've heard people use Michelle. That's kind of making it American as well. It's spelled M-I-C-H-A-L, so Michelle does work. As near as I can tell, I'm not a Hebrew expert, okay? But as near as I can tell, in Hebrew, it's Michal. It's got that little bit that going on in it, like a lot of Hebrew words do. And so it's Michal. And I probably won't say Michal all night long. I'll probably say Michal, which is just the way I'm going to say her name tonight. After addressing her name, second, let's consider the days that David lived in. Because we're going to find some things here in our study tonight that are going to make us feel a little uncomfortable about David. And it's important for us to understand that he's living at the very end of the time of the judges. The last judge, Samuel, is still alive. And the first king is still alive. So they're in this transition. And they're gaining more information. But even in the time of the kings do things that are not right. David does things that aren't right. Kings were not supposed to accumulate wives or gold. The kings ended up doing both of those. You remember there was one king who they had abandoned the temple, and he found the scriptures in the temple, had them read out loud, and wept that they'd actually lost them. That's how bad things had gotten. So they had not had the complete revelation of scriptures that you and I have. We have the complete revelation, knowing exactly how God wants everything put together in a package for us to read and apply to our lives, and we still don't do everything perfect. So we don't want to judge David, but we do understand there's going to be things here that make us uncomfortable as we make our way through this study. Now, it said in Judges 21:25, this is the last verse in the book of Judges. So this is right at the time that David is around. It says, Judges 21:25, in those days, there was no king in Israel, and everyone did what was right in his own eyes. And we'll see some of that as we make our way through our study today. Now, the marriage of David and Michal is like a play. There's several different acts that we have to take a look at. You go to a play and there's act one, there's act two, there's act three. Well, we have act four and act five. We have five acts that we're going to be looking at today. And this helps us put the complete picture together of this untold story, because she is and has been somewhat maligned. Even I did it earlier in our series in the life of David. I talked about Charles Swindoll saying, when King Saul said, anybody who defeats Goliath, I'm going to give him my daughter in marriage, that Charles Swindoll had said, I'm going to plague him with my daughter. That's the words he used. Now, why did he say something like that? And why would I kind of tag on to that? Because there comes a point where David, bringing the Ark of the Covenant into Jerusalem, it's been captured by the Philistines. It literally did. The Ark of the Covenant plagued them. Every city they went to, there were rats and tumors. And the word tumors in the Hebrew is really hemorrhoids. So there were rats and hemorrhoids, and they moved it from city to city. And finally, they put it on a card and sent it back to Israel. And when it got to Israel, they kind of put it where it was and left it there. Well, David wanted to bring it in. So David put it on a cart, just like the Philistines did, and brought it in. But Uzziah, when it tumbled a little bit, put his hand on the side of it, and it killed him. He died, and David got angry. But then David realized he hadn't brought it in the way God wanted him to. So he got the priest to bring it in with the poles, and he took off his outer tunic, and he danced. And the Bible says he whirled before the Lord, and he brought it in with joy, and God brought his presence back into Jerusalem. It had been said to David that the house of Obed-Edom is blessed because God's presence is there in the Ark of the Covenant. That's what the Ark of the Covenant represented. And so now David dances and whirls and comes in, and then Michal tells David, I despise you. I have despised you today. And so we look at that, and we also know that Saul said, I'm going to give you my daughter in his own heart, he said, to trip David up. So we put those two events together, Saul giving David his daughter to trip him up, and Michal having such a sharp tongue and sarcastic towards David, and we put it that she's got this problem, that she's plagued David. But when we take a step back, and we look at all of the events that happened between David and Michal, then we see there's something much deeper. There's something much more profound that's at work here, and something that even speaks to us in our marriages. So here's what I want to do, and this is kind of confusing, but I want to open up with Act 5. I want to come right to the very end. I want to show you the confrontation that David and Michal had when David came dancing in before the Lord. And David's heart is right here. He wants to worship God. He wants to bring it in correctly. So our curtain goes up, and I have them facing each other off, and she is sharp with him, and he returns sharpness to her. This could be any argument in any number of marriages that we have here today in which you could talk sharply because there are things in your past that maybe you haven't dealt with. It's said that when you bury the hatchet in marriage, don't bury it with the handle showing so you can grab it again. You've got to deal with the issues. And I want to show you before our study is done that there are some undealt with issues between these two that put something to play on this particular conflict. So the curtain goes up, and here it is, 2 Samuel 6:16. Now as the ark of the Lord came into the city of David, Michal, Saul's daughter, looked through a window and saw King David leaping and whirling before the Lord, and she despised him in her heart. We're going to learn the first thing that we're introduced to her is that she loved David. That's the first thing we're told about Michal and David at all. She loved him, but now he's the king and she's one of his wives and she despises him. In 2 Samuel 6, 20-23, we have the encounter. Then David returned to bless his household. What's David doing? He's coming into his house to bless the house. The Ark of the Covenant is there. They've now got the Ark of the Covenant in Jerusalem. And Michal, the daughter of Saul, came out to meet David and said, and listen to this sarcasm, how glorious was the king of Israel today, uncovering himself today in the eyes of the maids of his servants, as one of the base fellows shamelessly uncovers himself. So she accuses him of being base. She's saying, you stripped down for these girls that are out there, just like some base fellow would do. And she's sarcastic to the core. Now that's sharp. We can say things that are sharp to one another, and then we can respond with things that are just as sharp. And that's what David does. David doesn't take it. So David said to Michal, it was before the Lord who chose me instead of your father and all of his house. Do you see him snapping back? She's like, you're like one of the base fellows. And it's like, I took over the place of your dad and God put me here. David's not done. He said, to appoint me ruler over the people of the Lord of Israel. Now all of a sudden David's got a little pride going on there. God appointed me as ruler over Israel. We're going to read that early on. David says, who am I to be a part of the king's family? He's humble about it. But now he's like, God chose me. Then he says, therefore, I will play music before the Lord, and I will be even more undignified than this, and I will be humble in my own sight. Well, he's not being humble right there. When you're telling people I'm going to be humble, that's not humble. Let me just tell you how humble I am. I got a new book that I wrote. How I achieved humbleness, and how you can too, right? It's just not humble. And I'll be more humble in my own sight. But as for the maidservants of whom you've spoken, he didn't forget about the maidservants she brought up. By them, I will be held in honor. Therefore, Michal, the daughter of Saul, had no children to the day of her death. It seems that this event caused them to be estranged from one another. But it's not what caused the estrangement. And that's what I want to show you. The curtain goes down on Act 5. This is really the end of the play. And here's where we would want to consider and reflect upon our own relationships, our own marriages. But we need to go back to Act 1 to do that. And Act 1 opens up, and Michal is just a young woman. And David, a young man. Neither of them have been married. And it says in 1 Samuel 18, verse 17, "Then Saul said to David, 'Here is my older daughter Merib. I will give her to you as a wife. Only be vigilant for me and fight for the Lord's battle.' For Saul thought, 'Let my hand not be against him, but let the hand of the Philistines be against him.'" So he wanted to give David a wife, wanting the Philistines to be against him. Maybe Saul thought that he would be divided. He's been a great soldier up to this point. Everything he's done, he's been successful at. He's been leading men, and he's been valiant in doing it. And he's going to be even more so as time goes on. But maybe he thought, if I get him divided here, he's got a wife at home, maybe then the Philistines will get him. So David said to Saul, "Who am I? And what is my life or my father's family, that in Israel I should be the son-in-law to the king?" But it happened at that time, when Merib, Saul's daughter, should have been given to David, that she was given to Adriel, the Mahalathite, as a wife. Now, we don't know what happened. It fell through. He was going to give her Merib, but he didn't. Maybe Merib wasn't old enough to marry when he told her, and they had to wait a while. Maybe Merib got into a relationship with Ariel, and so Saul ended up giving her. Maybe it's what her desire was. We just don't know. There could be all kinds of things that would have caused this to happen. Maybe Saul was just being Saul at this point. He's insanely jealous, and he's willing to use his daughters as his pawns, not caring about what they feel like. So maybe he just gave her away because of that. But we're going to see what he does here, and it isn't beyond that he did this just to hurt David. It says, verse 20, "Now Michal, Saul's daughter, loved David, and they told Saul, and the thing pleased him. And Saul said, 'I will give her to him, that she may be a snare to him.'" Note, this isn't God saying, "I'm going to give her to him that she will be a snare." It's Saul saying that. This is where part of the misunderstanding comes from, and I think the slander or the mischaracterization of Michal. Because it's Saul that wants her to be a snare, and that the hand of the Philistines may be against him. Same thing he said about Merib. "Therefore Saul said to David a second time, 'You shall be my son-in-law today.' And Saul commanded his servants, 'Communicate to David secretly and say to him, look, the king has delighted in you, and all of his servants love you.'" Now, the king has delighted in you, that's a lie. All of the servants love him, that's the truth, which causes him to be insanely jealous. "Therefore, become the king's son-in-law." So Saul's servant spoke these words in the hearing of David. And David says, "Does it seem to you a light thing to be the king of the son-in-law, seeing I am a poor and lightly esteemed man?" And the servants of Saul told him, saying, "In this manner David spoke." Then Saul said, "Thus you shall say to David, the king does not desire a dowry, but 100 foreskins of the Philistines," which is gross. Let's get that out there right there. "To take vengeance on the king's enemies." So a dowry in their day was given to the father of the bride, which was kind of a seal or a guarantee of the marriage. The man was to give the money to the father of the bride as a way to say, if this doesn't work out, then you'll have the money to be able to take care of her if it doesn't work out. Or as a commitment, you get some skin in the game. You're going to give a dowry to her father to marry her. You've got an investment. Now, you should have more than an investment in a marriage, but this is the way that things were done. And so Saul says, "I just want you to go out and kill some Philistines and bring me their foreskins." But Saul thought to make David fall by the hand of the Philistines. So Saul's plan was, he's got to get out there and get 100 foreskins, and so the Philistines are going to kill him. So when his servants told David these words, it pleased David well to become the king's son-in-law. Now the days had not expired, I think, for Michal to become married to him. Therefore David arose and went, he and his men, and killed 200 men of the Philistines. And David brought their foreskins, and they gave them in full count to the king. which is gross, okay? That he might become the king's son-in-law. Then Saul gave him Michal, his daughter, as wife. Thus Saul saw and knew that the Lord was with David. What did he mean that he saw and he knew that the Lord was with David? First of all, that he killed 200 Philistines and didn't die. Secondly, he saw the love between Michal and David. There was this true, genuine love between them. She loved him, and now she's married to him. This is their first marriage. They are in the honeymoon phase. And our curtain will close here. Let me read verse 30. Then the princes of the Philistines went out to war, and so it was whenever they went out that David behaved more wisely than all the servants of Saul. Abner is the commander of the army of Saul. David is a commander under Abner, and he is behaving more wisely than any of the servants of Saul, so that his name became highly esteemed. So now he's even more highly esteemed. And so I would have them together in their home in Bethlehem as newlyweds, as the curtain goes down and the second act opens up. It's really our third act, but the second act comes up. I probably should have done this a different way now. I'm looking back at it going, maybe it would be a better way to do it. So the second act in their life, the first is their marriage. The second is their rescue and escape. By the way, let me give you these five acts because I didn't do it earlier. I should have. Number one is the marriage, act number one. Then act number two is the rescue and escape. Act number three is additional marriages. Act number four is the marriage restored. And act number five is the conflict. We've already looked at the conflict and we've already looked at the marriage. Now let's take a look at the rescue and the escape. This is 1 Samuel 19, 11 through 17. Then Saul sought to pin David to the wall with a spear, but he slipped away from Saul's presence and he drove the spear into the wall. So David fled and escaped that night. We know that there was a distressing spirit. The King James says an evil spirit from the Lord that was distressing Saul. Now, if you don't understand that, if that causes you confusion now, and you weren't at our study a while back, we spent a lot of time talking about what this distressing spirit could be. Quickly, it could have been like God passively taking his hands off of Job and Satan then doing things with Job when God had passively taken his hands off of him. It could have been that kind of a distressing spirit. It could have been an angel, a good angel, that who distressed the Egyptians by killing their firstborn son. And so it could have been distressing him like that. It could have been either way. And we talk in detail about it. I wish I had the name of the study that we did where we talked in detail about it, but it was early on when it says, it was one of our first studies, that the Spirit of the Lord fell upon David, but the Spirit of the Lord had left Saul and a distressing spirit from the Lord came upon him. And so he tried to kill him. David came to play music to soothe him, and he tried to kill him by throwing the spear at him. This was the second time he had done it, and David escaped both times. But now it says that David fled and escaped that night, verse 11, Saul also sent messengers to David's house, which we assume is in Bethlehem. At least that's the way I picture it. Maybe David has a house. Jerusalem is nowhere around at this point, okay? David will take Jerusalem and it will become the capital under King David. But I picture it in Bethlehem. It says, so he sent messengers to David's house to watch him and to kill him in the morning. And Michal, David's wife, told him, saying, if you do not save your life tonight, tomorrow you will be killed. So into this young newlywed's life came this very real danger. And she was somehow connected enough to learn the plot. Saul had the plot. He was going to kill him the next morning. He was going to lay men out and kill him. And she found out about it. And so she warned him. Then in verse 12, so Michal let David down through a window. And this is how we know they're still young, because for those of us that are older, we wouldn't crawl out a window and you wouldn't let your husband down through a window, right? You'd find another way to rescue him, but she lets him down through a window. And so she rescues him. She warns him and she rescues him. And now she's responsible, not for being a plague to him, but actually helping him. She's done what a wife should do in this situation and helped him. And he went and he fled and escaped. And Michal took an image and laid it in the bed. Now, she's going to put an image in the bed to make it look like David. Then she's going to say that he is sick to buy him time to be able to escape. Now, this image, is a teraphim. That's the word in Hebrew, which is the word for idol. And so why is there an idol in David's house? Now, you can imagine that there's been a lot of ink spilled over this particular thing. Did David, who was a man after God's own heart, who wrote all the Psalms, have an idol in his home? Here's what we don't know. We don't know where she got it from. It doesn't say she took her teraphim. She took an image. So we don't know where she went and got the image, but she went and got the image. It was somewhat life-size, and she put it in the bed. She put goat's hair on it. Listen to what it says. Verse 13, and Michal took an image and laid it in the bed, put a cover of goat's hair on the head, and covered it with clothes. So when Saul sent messengers to David, she said, he is sick. Then Saul sent messengers back to David saying, bring him up in his bed that I might kill him. Bring the whole bed here. If he's sick, I want the whole bed. And when the messengers had come in, there was the image in the bed and a cover of goat's hair on his head. And Saul said to Michal, why have you deceived me like this? The anger of her father, a stately king at this point, angry with his daughter, and says, and sent away my enemy so that he has escaped. And Michal answered Saul, he said to me, let me go, for why should I kill you? So she says, he said he was going to kill me, and so I let him go. I helped him because he said he was going to kill me. Now, this is the only part of this story that has anything negative on her. And she's, at this point, protecting herself from an insanely jealous, angry father. And we can certainly overlook her protecting herself at this point after buying David the time that he needed to escape. Now, our curtain would come down at the end of this act, and we would have David fleeing through the darkness. And we would have Michal by herself with anxiety, wondering what's going to happen to her husband. As far as we know, they will not see each other again for over a decade. There is a breach in their relationship by sheer distance and the hatred of her father to want to destroy her. Now, we also know that David made efforts two times to contact Jonathan, so that he took some risk to contact Jonathan about his safety and whether or not Saul really hated him and whether he could come back in. But he learned that Saul really did have this hatred and wanted to kill him. And so Jonathan, through messages, told him, my father wants to kill you. You need to leave. And so he left. And as far as we know, he left without having any communication with them.
Thank you so much for joining us for Practical Christian Living with Robert Furrow, pastor of Calvary Tucson. We pray that wherever you're listening from, the study of God's Word is encouraging you and strengthening your walk with Christ. If you'd like to hear more of Robert Furrow's teachings, visit calvarytucson.com. Producing this program would not happen without the support and generosity of listeners like you. If you'd like to partner with us financially, and Practical Christian Living Radio and TV has blessed you, please visit pclaz.org. That's pclaz.org, where you can make a secure one-time donation or sign on to become a monthly partner on a reoccurring basis. We'd love for you to join us at one of our two campuses in Tucson. Our West Campus is located at 5170 South Julian Drive, and our East Campus is located at 8711 East Speedway. East Campus service times are Saturday evenings at 6 p.m. and Sundays at 10 a.m. Our West Campus meets Sunday mornings at 8:45 a.m. and 11:15 a.m. Our midweek service times are Wednesday, 6 p.m. at our East Campus and 7:15 p.m. at our West Campus. You can also listen live to our Saturday, 6 p.m., Sunday morning, 10 a.m., and Wednesday evening, 6 p.m. services right here on Reach Radio Tucson at 106.7 FM, 96.1 FM HD4, 690 AM, streaming at reach.radio or via our Reach Radio app on your Android or iPhone. If you have recently accepted Jesus into your life and you have questions about salvation, we'd love to help guide you in your journey. email us at saved@calvarytucson.com. Don't forget to follow us on social media, Instagram at Calvary Tucson or Facebook at Calvary Chapel Tucson. Our local listeners can watch Practical Christian Living Sunday mornings at 8:30 on KEGA 9 TV. Thank you for joining us for Practical Christian Living, a ministry of Calvary Tucson, where we are reaching for Jesus, connecting with people, and walking in truth.
Calvary Tucson has developed a discipleship school with you in mind. Reach College of Ministry is for adults of all ages who want a deeper relationship with Jesus, a stronger grasp of the Bible, and practical insight into fulfilling your God-given calling. Earn your certificate in theology in as little as 1 year, or enroll in individual courses for personal growth. Attend courses online or in person at Calvary Tucson's East Campus. Visit thereachcollege.org today to learn more and start this exciting journey.